Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how the devil are you
doing? Hola, yet another Abroad in Japan show and yet another location where I'm doing it from. I'm not in a studio, I'm not in the cabin down the end of my garden, I am very much in a meeting room at the development that Stack Studios is in. I've been kicked out.
I love the way that you record the podcast at, like, in a shed at the end of your garden, like an old man. I'm just going down the shed.
I feel like I just remember when Roald Dahl would go on a little shed down the end of his garden. That's where he would write all of his amazing books, and he would have a little pencil and he would kind of write everything by hand and obviously get it tidied up afterwards. But I find it fascinating that whether it would come rain or hail, he'd be there with a little blanket over his knees and a little three-bar heater, and he'd just sit there and he'd write all day, and then at the end of the day he'd go back and do whatever he does with his life outside the book writing world. But yeah, I feel a little bit like that. But to be honest, that's the best sound, is the best quality I'm going to get out of the podcast by going down the end of my garden, because Chris, yours is the only show. Abroad in Japan is the only show I really do from the end of the garden. So therefore, I have created a studio that basically only serves the Abroad in Japan podcast. So I hope you're happy. I will be billing you at the end of the cycle for the 300 quid
delighted
of timber and acoustic foam panels.
Delighted to be the catalyst of your shit old man shed endeavours. You seem to know an awful lot about Roald Dahl, by the way. I don't know if I'm the only one listening into you there wondering how you know so much about Roald Dahl and his blankets.
I think that every kid of my generation knew a lot about Roald Dahl, but as you got a little bit older, you realised you didn't know enough about Roald Dahl, and we'll leave it at that. But I've spent all weekend. It's a really weird kind of abstract life I led over the weekend. Went to watch a bit of football. That was very enjoyable.
Right.
But Hartlepool versus Crystal Palace, a lot of fun. And then I spent most of Sunday building a box. Sunday building a box. I've spoken about my arcade machine. It's all I've talked about since Christmas, to be honest, because I've just spent the whole time upgrading it and improving it and refining it. And now I'm in a situation where I needed it to be a bit taller. Now, these little arcade boxes you buy online, they're kind of like three-quarter length. They're like a smaller version of the classic arcade machine. Mm. So when you're standing up, it's too short. And so you need to have a little chair next to it. But you can buy these 50, 60 quid boxes that are designed specifically for these arcade machines, right? And I was like, I am not going to spend 50, 60 quid on an arcade machine shoe to make it a little bit taller. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go down to Wix. I'm going to go down to Screwfix. I'm going to buy at least 70 quid's worth of material and make my own. And waste an entire day just building a box. So I spent an entire day just building a box. And I made it. I'm really excited.
I am the very person that just bought the actual. I just bought it. I bought the one that's already done because I'm.
Oh, really?
A nice illustration.
Oh.
There. I've got like the Pac Man and the one with the duck. I can never remember the name of it. Dick Duck or something. Got it in the ramen shop. I wasn't going to build a box. I just spent $50 more to have it in the box already. So. A tale of two people.
You're right, though.
Old and young. Lazy and DIY. If I built a box, it wouldn't have worked, would it? It would have fucking fallen apart.
I don't think people give joinery and woodworking enough respect in 2021. Because I was like, I'm going to have a crack at this. And it's a very simple box. It's a very simple product. But I was like, I'm going to make it. And then I had to spray paint it, and I got spray paint all over everything. Got it on the wooden floorboards got in the living room. So, look, it wasn't wholly successful, but it looks like a box, it fits like a glove, and there's nothing more satisfying. Every time I walk past that box, I go, I made that box.
Good. Thanks, man. Mate. Good man. I'm glad you've had a productive DIY box building weekend. I've been sending bloody emails all over the world to like the Lincoln Center in Broadway. Do you know this Ken Watanabe documentary is finished?
Yes, done.
Right, it's done, as I mentioned last week.
In the can.
But because it's Japan and Japan likes copyright laws, and I use like some screenshots from The Last Samurai or Letters from Iwo Jima or The King and I, which he performed in Broadway in London. They're like the sort of Japanese side of it that I'm dealing with was like, well, we need to get permission to use these images of The Last Samurai.
Oh, God.
So I got like contact Warner Brothers, and they've got to be like, yeah or no. And it's just like, oh, come on. If I'd used a clip from The Last Samurai, I'd completely understand it. But a photo, like a publicly accessible screen grab, it's fair use. But fair use doesn't exist in Japan, right? And it's just banging my head against the wall. A time of celebration, should be happy that it's done, has quickly turned to shit. And I'm sure we'll sort it out. And I understand why we have to. It's not Ken's fault, of course. It's just the way the laws are in Japan. But it's not fun. So, it's not good. And I hate copyright.
So, I mean, could you just... aren't YouTube in particular, aren't they sort of very... haven't they sort of made a change recently to kind of... map off certain parts? So if your clip is illegal or there's a copyright strike on your stuff in Japan, it just doesn't get shown, but you can still retain visibility on the US side and the Africa side and all the different places that where there hasn't been a copyright strike.
The Africa side.
It's a big continent.
That's a YouTube channel name right there. The Africa side. There was the Irish YouTuber dude whose name I can't recall. He did a channel about anime.
That's right.
And he had about 100 videos buggered by Toho, who are the cinema company here. And I've got to deal with them as well, actually, to get their permission. God forbid. But they basically struck down loads of his videos, and his channel faced like extinction. His whole career was in jeopardy. And luckily, YouTube came to his aid, actually, and helped him out. And YouTube sort of said, well, we'll just not show the videos in Japan then, because it's fair use around the world, just not in Japan. So YouTube can actually choose where your videos get shown or blocked. And I know a few people, actually, who do block... some people in Japan making videos that do block their videos in Japan.
Just so you don't get a copyright strike.
Because they are critical... Well, just know, like...
Okay, they're critical of Japan.
Not just that. Sometimes they want to talk about something in Japan. Something like as topical or whatever, talking about Japan. And
interesting.
You know, they didn't want any criticism from Japanese viewers, so they blocked their videos in Japan.
Ah.
Which I would consider doing if I ever made a hypercritical video about Japan. I would be like, I'll just block it in Japan. And they won't.
I won't get evicted from my house. Is hypercritical Japan, isn't that that thing down at the Excel Centre? but I've seen that guy who did the anime videos, the anime critiques. Don't care what part of the world you're in, that is a piss take, the stuff that he gets away with, the amount of clips he uses and the extended clips that he uses, I think it's beyond the pit. I don't think anyone who's putting together documentaries or putting together any kind of critical works, I think personally, the amount of footage he uses is egregious. I'm all for a free internet, oh, really? But that's ridiculous.
I mean, I haven't really seen many of his videos. I just sort of kept an eye on what was happening, just because obviously you always get a bit wary as a YouTuber. Certainly, Joey sort of helped defend him, because Joey does anime and Joey used to put clips and stuff. I think, yeah, I don't know. My rule of thumb and my advice to anyone doing YouTube is don't use copyrighted stuff, because it's pretty crap. I've had a few instances. Knatsky the movie, I don't have any revenue from that, because I bought a song that's copyrighted, and I bought it and I put it on, and when you buy a song, usually you get the rights to use it, and it's fine and it's wonderful, and I probably used like 20 copyrighted songs on that, and it was all fine. But one of the songs I bought from a website called I can't remember, it was like, it's not Artlist, it's another one, there's another website, a music website, and they gave it a strike, and I was like, oh, I bought the rights to this song. And they were like yeah, but you didn't. And I didn't, they've got some weird rule where you could buy the song and use it, but actually the artist took the ad revenue from the video.
Right, okay.
And I think I took it pretty, at the time I just sort of let it go, but in hindsight, what a fucking idiot. Because that's been like, the first few years there was no problem, then they just struck it one day and screwed it, and so I haven't had any revenue from it. I think I was pretty nice about that. I think maybe I didn't read the fine print as much as I should have, but
Gotta be careful.
Use a website like Epidemic Sound, Premium Beat, use a good website. I wonder, what was the name of the site? I'll have to look it up after, but
Spotify.
These things are sad. And there was this
clip, I've mentioned it before on the show, but the amount of times that where this has happened is actually quite interesting and stark. Family Guy were doing a skit about an old NFL game from back in the 90s, an old arcade game, Tecmo fucking ball or whatever. And somebody on the internet had obviously had captured footage from this arcade machine. He put it on YouTube, and Family Guy had used that footage and put it in a Family Guy. And so the original footage got a copyright strike because it was effectively uploading a bit of footage from Family Guy, even though Fox had just taken that footage online, captured by someone else online. Oh, so God. It's like, it's amazing what gets struck and what gets not. It'll get to a place where it's better. But especially like you look on sort of like TikTok or, you know, anything that's a bit more kind of transient and short form, people get away with all kinds of nonsense. Twitter, for example, you don't get much of a copyright strike unless you're uploading like clips from football matches or NFL or NHL or whatever. It will come to a sort of happy medium eventually, but at the moment it's just a mess. Scattergun, it's an and people just get, like creators like you, just get kind of struck down, get demonetized. Just like that, and they just and there's no recourse.
It's a scary thing. I mean, the website I looked up, it was MusicBed. Be careful if you get music from there. I got a song off there. I paid a lot of money for it, like $200, and my reward was to have my entire video demonetized. And I'm pretty furious about that now. I remember getting an email, and they were like, "Chris, we ask that if you use a song from MusicBed, that you let the artist take." I was like, what? I'm really angry about that. But yeah, Epidemic Sound, Artlist, premiumbeat.com, all of those are fine. They're all those, and Pond5. But yeah, nightmare. The world of YouTube. We've got a story this week from Andrew. He begins, "Hi, Rustic Pete and not unattractive broad. I was raised in Kitami-shi, an inland city in Hokkaido, where it would get deathly cold in the winter. One of my friends growing up was a kid called Nishiyama-kun. Nishiyama-kun had two defining features about himself. One was that he could recite all of the historical periods in Japan, from the Jomon period to the Showa period, off by heart." Well done. "The other attribute about Nishiyama-kun was that he was incredibly fat."
Okay. Oh, lordy.
Poor old Nishiyama-kun. Did he take a bite of a biscuit every time he recited an era, a historic period? Anyway, it was late on in the summer in the 1980s, most likely 1987, and Nishiyama-kun was at the park with his family celebrating a friend's birthday when he realised that the birthday feast that he had eaten was catching up to him. Given he was a large lad, he could really eat a lot. Luckily for him, his house was relatively close, so he told his parents he was leaving early and rushed home to go to the restroom. He got home with moments to spare, rushed open to the front door. To his horror, he realised that the house was locked and nobody was home. This, you think, would be obvious, given that he had only just bid goodbye to his parents at the park. He decided to run to his grandparents' home, which was situated on the opposite side of the road, but he realised they were also away. While desperately going around the house, looking for an open window, he realised his time was well and truly up. And he went to the toilet in the backyard. He then waddled home to await his parents' return. A few days later, he was coming home from school and noticed there was a police car in front of his grandparents' house. He went to the backyard to be greeted by his grandparents and two police officers who were standing around the pile of human waste from a few days earlier. Chris, he asked what was happening.
I mean, I really have to explain at this point, Chris is censoring on the fly this email.
It's pretty fucking obvious what happened here. He asked what was happening, and his grandparents explained that they had called the police when they discovered the waste on the floor. The police had called in the wildlife officer. The wildlife officer, bloody hell, worried that this was the work of a bear. The wildlife officer was certain that this was a brown bear and not a black bear, given the size of the amount of waste. And he gave the parents flyers.
You're allowed to say excretion, Chris. You're allowed to say excretion.
And the parents he gave the parents flyers to hand out to neighbours to warn them to be on the lookout for giant brown bears. This Yamakun eventually became
giant
a dentist,
brown something.
Which is completely unrelated to his story. All the best, Andrew. I don't like toilet humour normally, and yeah, we have someone that chooses these stories for us, and I should probably read ahead. But that is a pretty good story. I love that in the context of the bears, that's actually quite brilliant. And
has your poo ever been mistaken for the excretion of a much larger animal? Email in at broadenjapanpodcast@gmail.com.
I love that. I love how, like, because that is a legitimate concern in Hokkaido, right? You know, the old brown bears are huge and very dangerous. And
the old brown poos. Big brown poos.
God damn it. But
fantastic.
That's brilliant.
Right,
that's quite a good story, to be fair.
To say that story is right up my street is very much. And the street is covered in poo. Big poos.
Well done, Pete Donaldson.
Well done, Nishiyama Kun. Good lad. Good lad.
I wonder how he feels about that story now that he's a dentist. Does he keep it to himself? Clearly he does. But what a story.
Whoop, whoop, it's the sound of the police.
Funny lad, Donaldson. Pete Donaldson. We've got a story this week that doesn't involve bears or toilet humour.
No.
It involves technology, the future of convenience stores. What have we got, Pete? What have you got for us this week?
It also includes there's no toilet humour, there's no pooping, there's no nothing. In fact, it is the most sanitary of all of the technologies. There's a Japanese convenience store by the name of 7-Eleven, and we are a big fan of the place. I call it the British Embassy or the American Embassy, because back in the day it used to be a place where the only place where the cash machines would allow British people to take money out.
Yeah,
it's quite hard to find it. So I very much saw them as being, you know, a force for good. But they are coming up with new ways to interact with the 7-Eleven. There is a set of world's first non-contact display technologies being included at the cash register in 7-Eleven. Basically,
that sounds boring.
Self-service hologram tills
that hologram.
You can do use yourself, and like, it's incredible. Basically, they come into 7-Eleven. You don't need to touch anything. You don't need to get your fingers on anything. They don't need to go around and spray and wipe and tidy up these POS displays. They are self-service checkouts that you can use, and you don't have to touch anything. They've got these kind of like floating holographic screens with holographic buttons. And obviously, in the year of our Lord 2022, there's obviously massive risks of coronavirus infections. People don't want be touching things that other people have touched, and also, I mean, I guess the thing that surprises me is that Japan is even going for contactless you know, self-service registers, because I've never seen them before in Japan.
They are.
They're all over in Britain. Like, every place has got... You're lucky to see someone behind the machines and the registers these days. You sort of do everything yourself. But I'm just really surprised that they're sort of going all in. They're doing your own registers, and also they're floating screens, effectively. They look incredible.
I think, let's just call it what it is, it's a hologram. I looked it up and it was really cool. Like, it's like the screen uses like a mirror and it like reflects the image up. It looks like holograms are here after all these years, right? All this like hype. Finally, holograms are here, and they're not here for some real cool reason. They're here so you can buy your Family Mart fried chicken or 7-Eleven chicken.
But they've got buttons on them as well, because holograms, you know, they you don't necessarily think of them as being interactive, but they manage to track your finger where they are in 3D space, so you can sort of press each button. I hope it's not one of those things where you got to like put your hand in and wait for the button to register and then pull out again. You got to go boop, boop, boop,
oh,
boop.
Oh, God, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
No, I hope it looked pretty good. You can look at a video of it. If you look up floating hologram Japanese convenience stores, you can see a video at 7-Eleven demonstrating it. And I was actually really impressed by it. Like, it's interesting, all these technological advancements we've seen coming out of Japan during COVID. Do you remember a few weeks ago we had the masks that glow? They use some sort of chemical that glow if you're infected, right? So your mask, although in hindsight, maybe they wouldn't be very popular, because I know what people are like in Japan. They like to hide the fact that they've got COVID, and if they're walking around with like a mask changing colour showing that they're infected, I don't know how that would go down. But there's six big companies in Japan have worked on this. This isn't like a little crappy university project. This is like the real deal. Like, Toshiba and Mitsui Chemicals have all come together to work on this, and it's pretty exciting. This is cool. There's only six 7-Eleven stores in Tokyo that are doing this, starting from 1st of February. I'm going to go and track them down, but I'm going to wait until COVID dies down a little bit, because literally everyone I know has COVID at the moment.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, in Tokyo, everyone has had it, and it's not good. So I'm going to wait until it dies down, but I've got to see this. I've got to film it. I want to touch holograms.
The thing about the holographic screen, it just seems like you've got to get really kind of in the zone. You've got to be right in front of it, and you've got to be looking down into it before it actually you can actually see it. So it does cut down on people copying what you're doing on the next hill for whatever reason.
Yeah, like in the video of it, the camera starts from the side, right? And you can't see anything. And it's not until the camera is directly in front of the device that the screen becomes visible. I don't really know how the heck it works. It's genius, really. But
it's that old school... It's two technologies there. I think it's that old kind of fake mirror stuff they used to have in theatres. So it's not like... That's quite old technology, I guess, because I guess it's on a mirror. But then there's also the finger tracking stuff, which is probably quite new. I do sort of look back at going into, like, bit camera on the washing machine floor and just seeing, like, this product where it's like this big... I can't remember that. There's this technology that you only see in Japan. It hasn't been exported, because clearly no one's fucking interested, or they don't have a room or whatever. And it's just this kind of little cupboard, and I presume it's like a steamy cupboard that gets steamy, and you put your shirt in on a hanger and it just shakes it. And so that when I see technology, emerging technology in Japan, I always think it's the shaky cupboard, it's the shaky shirt cupboard, and I don't think it's going to be I don't think it's going to translate. I don't think it's going to come over for a long time.
The gateway to Narnia would be very different in Japan,
yes,
wouldn't
exactly.
it?
Yes, exactly.
Why aren't we going anywhere? Why is the whole thing moving? What a fucking nightmare. That when I went to the a few years ago, I went to the robot hotel, the robot dinosaur hotel, right? And in that video, everything was robotic, and they had lots of advancements in the room, and they had that in the room. The idea being, while you were asleep, you'd put your clothes in this magic wardrobe thing, and it would vibrate and use UV rays and whatnot to clean your clothes. It looked pretty good, to be fair. It was about the only thing that did work in that robot hotel. I was really nice to them, because they just opened, and I went in and nothing worked. There was a dinosaur that you check in. It talks to you. It's a bilingual dinosaur, robot velociraptor. And it'd be like, what is your name? And it would just cycle through four different languages, like Chinese, Japanese, German, English. And
I'm scared of comets.
But nothing worked. Each room had a little egg concierge thing that you could talk to. And you could, like, do fun things. So you could be like, what's my horoscope? Egg. And it would be like, you're going to die. And it would just like reel off useless
egg
shit.
Egg is angry with you. Egg is going to blow up.
But like you could tell it, like, turn down the lights. And it just would be like, okay. And they just wouldn't do it. And it felt like a cool idea in hindsight, but the execution was pretty poor. But because it was new and they let me film there, I pretended like it all worked when it differently. It definitely didn't.
It
was rubbish. But another advancement this reminds me of is you ever seen on Japanese trains how you... Not that I like to sneak around and look at people's things, but they have the screens on the phones where you can't see them from the side. You have to be like directly in front of it. Does that exist in the UK? Do people use that?
It reminds me of the tech you used to see on Virgin Atlantic screens on the back of the
airplanes. Chairs.
Because I remember watching Jackass 2.5, and there's a scene where a man's bum just poos out, very much like Nashiyama-kun, or his name was, earlier on, just poos everywhere, all over a train set. And I'm like, that is the worst thing I've ever seen on any television. Never mind, just on a... But I kind of checked the viewing angles, and it was actually quite hard for anyone to actually see, because there were kids around me, and I'm watching this guy shit everywhere, and I'm like, this is disgusting.
I'm just sitting in the row behind you, just watching you sort of dart going, from side to side around the screen, trying to see if you can see it, like a maniac.
Oh, it's horrible. But yeah, no, you don't necessarily... Because I think the viewing... I think like bad viewing angles is like kind of the emerging tech of the 90s on LCD screens. They were just like kind of, it was quite bad if you had a screen that couldn't be seen from far away. All the new LED tech, it's designed not to do that, I suppose. But so the phones in Japan, they've got like limited viewing distance because people want a bit of privacy.
There were a lot of brands of phones that did it and you couldn't see them. I think it's actually like a sticker you actually just put on the front of your phone. Okay. And the sticker's got some sort
like
of
a lenticular effect, right? Okay.
But because,
interesting.
You know, if you live in Tokyo, you're on a train all day, crammed in with people, you don't necessarily want people looking at your phone or seeing what you're looking at. So
erotic manga.
Erotic manga. Just like how Japanese phones, they when you take a photo, you have to hear the shutter sound, right?
Yes, yeah.
Legally, you have to. That's something a lot of people don't know.
If you buy a phone from Japan, you have to sort of flash the firmware to it. Because I bought a couple of cameras from Japan, and then realised, not that I care whether the shutter's on or off.
It's quite annoying, to be fair.
But it's quite annoying. It's quite, but it is just because of literal Japanese perverts on the train taking pictures of lasses bombs.
It is sad that it came to that they had to literally bake that into the functionality
absolutely
of smartphones.
Pathetic. I got a new phone and I got a new phone. One of those Samsung-y foldy ones.
Oh, the flip phone ones.
The flippy phone ones. The front screen is too small to be functional for my typing, and I'm too embarrassed to fold it out. So another successful bit of technology for Donnie. Well done, me.
Yeah, you'd fit right in Japan. We'll be back with the fax machine, guys, in just a moment with your comments and questions.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mm.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania. Too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
And we're back with the fax machine. What do we got this week from our listeners, Mr. Donaldson?
We got a message from Elise, an unpatriotic American, by their own admission. Hello, Crotchety Chris and Puckish Pete. The Winter Olympics have started, and I was curious whether generally Japan is enthusiastic to watch and see how their athletes perform. Chris, especially because you live in his hometown of Sendai, I'm curious whether you are aware of Yuzuru Hanyu, the two consecutive Olympic gold medalist currently going for his third medal. Ooh, what's he all about?
We're practically... Oh, I love Yuzuru Hanyu. Practically best friends. No, I don't know.
He's a scare guy. I don't know how big he is, to be honest. He's 21.
I don't know anything about the Olympics. I don't really have an interest in it. I've never have. Are you like an Olympic person? Do you enjoy it? Do you watch it?
No, I don't actually.
While building your box?
I like the Olympic football. By building my box, no, I've not watched any. I'm not like you. Occasionally, like you'll watch like the skeleton because that's exciting. But yeah, Winter Olympics leaves me a bit cold. All Olympics does, to be honest. I mean, it's just around in it.
I'm glad it's a thing, but I don't
understand
in
why it's so lucrative. I don't know why countries get so excited to try and bid for it, because frequently it's a bit of a, what do you call it, a white, it's not a white whale, is it? Pretty frequently it's a bit of a grey elephant. What's the thing if you really want it, but it's a bit of a misnomer?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know what I mean?
White elephant?
I don't know. Maybe. White.
Look it up. Yeah, I know what you mean, though.
Either way.
No, I want to know. Look it up. I'm going to get annoyed about that. The London Olympics. They did good things for London. They kind of did make London the centre of the world for a bit of time. Whereas the Tokyo Olympics, in comparison, disastrous in many ways, but kind of went all right when all was said and done. I don't know. I'm not really. You know, I'm the wrong man to talk to about sports.
I'm
or
the
fun
wrong man
or anything. We got one here from Robert, who says, "Hello, Chris abroad and Pete domestic."
Nice, Pete Coconut.
Robert from California here. You've mentioned how Japanese media is overly positive and everything is sugoi, so as not to offend anyone ever. Can you therefore trust any Japanese reviews for anything like restaurants, products, films, TV, and video games? Which sites, blogs tend to be more honest than others? Mecha thanks, Robert. That's an interesting question. Any thoughts on that, Pete?
Because I don't consume a lot of Japanese media, I don't know how it sort of can... I don't know how it correlates with the stuff that you sort of see on television, but you're right, it does seem very, very positive in every possible conceivable way. There's never anything critical. I mean, what's sort of like film? How do people talk about film in Japan? Do people kind of... I mean, presume, like, you, whenever there's like a big controversy in Japan, like there's enough kind of dissenting voices on Twitter and stuff talking about how they don't like stuff and they don't like how it's been represented or whatever, so there must be some kind of level of critical theory and thought out in Japan, surely.
I think that's why YouTube has become such a big deal in Japan. We've got these creators that could be a bit more sort of blunt and direct and opinionated.
Right.
I don't really consume a lot of Japanese media, but I'll say TV shows are very positive about things here. I've never seen a food show where someone goes in a restaurant and goes, "Oh, this tastes like sick." Like a Gordon Ramsay style scenario. It just wouldn't work. The whole culture is orientated around being sort of harmonious and avoiding conflict and being diplomatic about things. And I just don't think it would sit very well having a Gordon Ramsay style scenario where someone comes in and destroys your restaurant. But I think YouTube has been a big part of that. There are a lot of blogs and things where people write online. The internet in Japan is definitely a lot more critical than sort of mass media, TV and whatnot. So I think that's the place to be if you want to get like an honest opinion. TV, I still haven't seen anything. I've just seen, by the way, while I'm trying to think of something clever, I'm staring at a photo of my face looking really stupid that Pete has done a screen grab of. What's going on there?
What have I done?
My little profile icon for this is like me with my mouth wide open, looking like an idiot, looking like I've been electrocuted.
I think it takes a I think when you join the room, it automatically takes a picture. Because I can see mine. Because if you click on that, I think you can take another photo. So it just takes whatever
really
screen grab you've got there.
It looks like I've been stabbed in the back with a knife, and I'm like, whoa!
Click on it again. Click on it again. Click on the picture.
And while the knife
takes
going in,
photo.
I'm pulling a stupid face, and then the
computer screenshot. We're using a new system, and we're enjoying the new features and silliness that we can kind of add into the system.
I'm glad this podcast isn't on video format. We've got one here from Cheryl from Toronto. It says, "Hi, Chris and Pete, being one of my favourite regular characters in the videos, I have a Natsuki question. As a non-YouTuber, does Natsuki get noticed when he's out and about on his own? Has Chris's YouTube fame affected Natsuki's salon in any way? Do people rush over to book a haircut and ask for the Abroad in Japan discount? Chris, you should try getting caramel highlights in your hair this summer. Take care, stay safe, boys. Cheryl from Toronto."
Yes, please.
No highlights. I've done that before.
Little cheese curds in the hair.
I've learned from my mistakes.
Highlights.
I've learned from my highlight mistakes. Natsuki has had quite a few people go to his salon over the years. I mean, it's a far-flung journey, and I think that's kind of good in some respects because he used to want to keep his salon private, but that's quite hard to do when it's a public shop. Yeah. And he's had quite a few people go there. If you do ever plan to go there, try and book an appointment. Don't just rock up because it's good to book an appointment. You don't just turn up to his place. He does get noticed as well. Like when we did Natsuki the movie in London, he got spotted a fair bit. Whenever he's in Tokyo, people spot him wandering around, cigarettes in hand. He does get spotted. He does. And I've just bloody promoted his cameo this week. He's been trying to push his cameo. You know the thing where you pay a message. You pay Natsuki and he sends you a message going, "Happy birthday, happy birthday, David." He does that. So it's good. Check
get
it
involved.
Out.
Get yourself a little message. Lovely.
Yeah, he gets 100% of the money from it, so it's a good little earner for Natsuki. It's probably more lucrative than his salon, I think, as well. So he could be closing his salon, just being doing cameo full time.
Yeah, cool.
Keep the stories, questions, comments coming in, guys, to abroadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back later in the week to do it all over again. But for now, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, have yourself a great week, and we'll see you to do it right back here in the next few days on the Abroad Japan Podcast. Bye for now.
Does your poo look like bear poo? Email us.
Oh, no.
Yes.
In Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.